Welcome to Scrappy ABM, your source for groundbreaking approaches that don't break the bank. ABM shouldn't cost $200K in tech to even get started. So if you want to get started with ABM or make your program even better without investing a massive amount of money, you're in the right place. Each week, we'll hear from the brightest minds in the marketing world who are redefining ABM, achieving incredible results with untraditional methods, limited resources, and a whole lot of creativity. This isn't a show about how much money you can spend on fancy tech or overhyped tools. Instead, it's about celebrating creative problem solving and the scrappiness it takes to get ABM right. We'll dive into how these marketing leaders built robust ABM strategies with limited resources, revealing the actionable insights that led to their biggest wins. So if you're a marketer ready to challenge the status quo and build a scalable, efficient, effective marketing strategy, Scrappy ABM is the show for you. So if you're ready to discover ABM strategies that are lean, impactful, and utterly transformative, let's dive into this episode.
I'm thrilled to introduce Mason Cosby, founder of Scrappy ABM, to the show. Mason, welcome to the podcast. Give us a little spiel about yourself, about Scrappy ABM, and what led you to start the company.
Yeah, well, first, thank you so much for having me. I'm incredibly excited for B2B MX East. Every event that I've been to with you guys is always a joy and great content. So just thankful for the opportunity to hopefully share a couple of things that might be helpful for a few people. As far as a little bit about me, in the past 3 years, generated about $8 million as a solo marketer through account-based programming that required nothing more than a CRM and a marketing automation platform. I was given the ABM mandate of, hey, can you go build something for us? And you get no more budget. And I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, when you go to look at ABM, there's generally a massive amount of investment. And I've been fortunate enough to have to be scrappy with it. And about a year ago, ended up launching this company. In the past year, we've generated about $1 million in sales, hired 8 team members, worked with over 20 clients building out their ABM programs, and not one has been unhappy. So very thankful for the past year and the opportunity to people build ABM in a more foundational way.
So ABM always fascinates me because while it's been around for quite some time at this point, I feel like there's just always something new. There's always something innovative. And in a sense, I feel like the practice is almost newer than ever. So kind of with that perspective in mind, Mason, can you walk us through how account-based marketing has evolved since the buzzword days?
This may be a hot take. I don't know that we're out of the buzzword days. I just feel like the buzzword has now become ABM plus AI equals somehow up and to the right. So from my perspective, I think the research that came out from Terminus in 2021 was that 94% of B2B marketers were building ABM programs. And I don't know that that is even possible. Like, I don't know that every
marketer
is built.
Yeah, where are they?
Yeah, like there's so many people that are still exploring ABM for the first time. So I think that as we look back at what people were saying was ABM, there was a research study from Ascend2 that said that 50% of B2B marketers were building ABM programs to generate new contacts, which that statement in and of itself is hilarious, that they're building an ABM program to get contacts. So I just think that right now, after it's been around for about a decade in a formalized approach, people are really starting to figure out what it is and what it isn't. And we're getting really specific and honed in around how to execute. So that's where I think we are today as it relates to building at ABM. Like, there is still, I think, that buzzword around it, because you're seeing all the metrics of success increase around like 70% from awareness to pipeline to close won deals increase about 70%. So people just see that and they're like, oh, I got to do it. But they still don't know what it means. But I feel like those that have been practitioners in the marketing space specifically are really starting to hone in and figure it out.
So then obviously ABM is, of course, still in its growth spurt, growth stages. So I'd imagine that then naturally there are some growing pains in the process as, you know, practitioners adapt their ABM strategies and innovate and all that fun stuff. So kind of with that in mind, what are some common challenges and or pain points that modern B2B marketers are facing with ABM today?
Yeah, I mean, it's very well researched through companies like ITSMA that have really done a great job of helping us to understand the consistent reasons why ABM is failing. And it comes down generally to 3 core reasons. I want to be clear, there's a lot of reasons that ABM fails. But at the end of the day, it's number one, the lack of sales and marketing alignment. This kind of comes in 2 flavors. So one would just be misalignment on communication and what things mean. A prime example would just be marketing saying, we've generated so many leads, and what they mean are like form fills on webinars, and sales is saying, we need more leads, meaning opportunities in the pipeline. So we both use the same words, but we mean different things. We quite literally aren't speaking the same language. So there's that misalignment when we talk about marketing and sales. But the other thing is, I was talking with a client last week, And they were just saying, you know, we really just are struggling to get sales to get on board with our ABM program. And I was like, well, why? And I was like, well, these accounts that they're going after that are coming inbound close at 35%. And these other accounts we're doing from an ABM program perspective are closing at sub 10%. But they have a much higher lifetime value and they churn less. So for the business, these are better fit customers. But for the sales team, they get paid less on those customers. So even then they close at a lower rate. Again, higher lifetime value. They stick around for years, whereas your 35 to 40% customers, they stick around for like 6 months. So in that context, it's actually not even marketing and sales misalignment, because marketing is aligned on what is a business objective, but you're not compensating your sellers appropriately to actually action what is necessary for the business. So that's an executive leadership problem that has to be solved. And like all of that is really just factored into that misalignment piece. The other two are a little bit more simple to outline. Number two is just the lack of dedicated resources. ABM gets thrown at somebody. Like the worst thing that can happen is somebody listens to this podcast. It's like a CEO or CMO. It's like, oh, we got to go build ABM. And they go just throw it at a marketing manager and say like, oh, go do ABM, because they're given the accountability to build an account-based marketing program without the authority to facilitate organizational change. It's like if sellers are compensated in such a way that it doesn't make sense to for sellers to go after account-based programs or the target accounts in the account-based program, then that's never going to work. And you need the resources from an executive leadership perspective, from a headcount perspective to build this out to actually make ABM work. And the last and most certainly not least would just be the measurement of success. People don't know how to measure if we're winning or losing, specifically in the context of an account-based program, because most marketing automation platforms or CRMs are largely based on a contact level, and accounts are very different than contacts. Like it's not one individual person. It's do we have account level engagement? So we're seeing multiple people engage with our brand and showing specific interest, and they're the right kind of people in the account. And they may be also showing some form of third-party intent signals that showcase that they're showing in-buying market signals or in-market buying signals. From there, you also have to factor in like firmographics. So it's firmographics plus first-party engagement, plus then those in the buying decision committee to actually factor the weight of that first-party engagement plus third-party intent signals. You factor all that together, and that's how it's recommended that you generally measure an ABM program. And like that's just really hard out of the gate. So when you factor those three things together, that's why ABM is often failing. And that's what's so hard for so many practitioners today.
Yeah, those are some really awesome points. And really kind of specifically for me, really that first point really shines a light on that sales and marketing misalignment, because we're always talking about that misalignment. However, to your point, you know, how it's not like how they're not getting the quantity versus, you know, they are getting quality accounts, but they're not really, you know, sales isn't seeing the dollars from these quality accounts. So that's definitely a very unique perspective. I feel like another element adding to that ABM evolution is the, obviously, like what you alluded to before, is the introduction of AI into everything. And then you also have the increasing preferences for self-service buying journeys. And even as our research shows, up to 2/3 of buyers don't really engage with a sales rep until their journey is just about done, right? So with all of that in mind, what does a successful ABM program, or how does a successful ABM program contend with all of those factors?
If I'm thinking through where most people still are today, based on the research that's been coming out, that 80% of marketers don't feel like they have a successful ABM program, I actually think it's focusing less and less on shiny object syndrome, things like AI. And I was just doing a session and I got 5 questions in a row that were just, what's the best tool? Like, what's the best tool? What's the best tool? And it's like, it's not really about the technology. It's not about the sexy things that we can do with AI. It's really kind of 2 core buckets. It's like, do we have the right processes in place that actually make it easy for our team to engage right fit accounts? And then additionally, do we have message audience alignment? It's like, are we saying the right things to the right people at the right time? And I hate that that is the answer, because I remember when I was first getting into ABM, I would hear that all the time. I'd be like, oh, that's so cliche. Like, there's got to be more to it. And like, there is, but if you don't have that, then there isn't. Like, yes, there's more sophistication that you can incorporate with great tooling that allows you to de-anonymize your website traffic and that allows you to create personalized content at scale. Like, I was seeing this really cool tool called Tofu that like takes into account all your past engagement touch points, contextualizes it to the account, that creates AI-generated landing pages at scale, 1-to-1 for every account that you're trying to engage, which is super cool. But Like, my favorite phrase is AI is not autopilot, it's a co-pilot. And for so many marketers, they just need to do it right the first time on their own with their current tooling to then figure out what works and what doesn't, and then where their gaps are. And then once they figure out their gaps, they can fill in said gaps with better processes or new tools or new headcount. So again, there's a lot of really cool, sexy stuff that's coming out. I would just say you need a marketing automation platform to track and to have some form of distribution. You need a website and you need a CRM. That's what you need to get your first program off the ground. And once you've seen success with that, then you can look to scale further.
I love that. And to be honest, like, obviously B2B, we love our DGR as well. We love our acronyms here. So I always say KISS, right? Keep it simple, stupid. Like, if you're just starting out, you don't need all the fluff and the fancy stuff. And just like you said, that shiny new object syndrome is real, but keeping it simple and just starting off with the basics will definitely get you far. So right now I'd like to kind of shift gears specifically to your B2B MX keynote, which obviously, if everybody was paying attention to this conversation so far, we'll touch on ABM or account-based marketing, right? But a good part of your keynote at B2B MX East suggests that marketers stop scaling ABM. And you did mention the word scale just recently. So it suggests marketers stop scaling ABM and start stacking signals. So without obviously spilling too much of your keynote, can you elaborate a little bit on that? And why are you quote unquote, and don't quote me exactly, but why are you against scaling ABM if you are? But it sounds like you are.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I think that when we look at most account-based content, account-based marketing content, or even a lot of the technology vendors or the services providers, everyone talks about scale. And don't get me wrong, I think that programs should eventually scale, but they should first work. And like, I don't think we've spent enough time just saying like, oh, does this work? Like, are we doing this well before we try to scale everything? And because we focus so much on the scaled approach, we never think about, like, is this the right thing to be doing? Like, how can we validate this? So as you look at your existing data in your existing first party information, most people have some form of a CRM that captures contact information, and that contact information on those accounts has lots and lots of interesting information as well, like where they work, the size of the organization, what they converted on, like how did you source that contact? And then also, depending on how you set your things up, like I'm on HubSpot Starter. I pay $120 a year for a website, for a marketing platform, for CRM, and I can track contact engagement on individual pages on my website. You can do all that right now. Like, you don't have to have this massive platform. And what you can then do is identify within your current tooling, what signals do I have? And signals meaning interactions that our target accounts have already done with us. And there are a lot of signals that may not necessarily be captured in those places. For example, I make the joke that I have the least trackable marketing program of all time. And my head of ops hates me for it because all I do is LinkedIn, I go on podcasts, and I speak at events. And we've generated $1 million and none of it was easily tracked. It sucks. But like, there's lots and lots of signals that are captured through those different programs. So again, it might be that someone engages with my LinkedIn content every single day. That's a right fit customer. It might be that they've scanned some QR codes at our different speaking sessions or events. And as a result, scanning those QR codes, which we can track through UTM tracking, that's very basic. We can see, oh, they're actively engaged in our podcast. It might be that they attended a session, and then after that session, they connected with me on LinkedIn and sent me a message that said, hey, thanks for engaging. None of those necessarily tracked in your CRM, but are viable signals. So when you compare your existing programming that may have signals that are not yet tracked up against the contact, the company, and the deal properties that you currently have, you have lots and lots of signals that you currently could build programming around. And my primary goal in helping people get these things off the ground is to just build a program around the existing signals you have. And then when you start stacking different signals together, you get one of two things. One, for example, let's say we're going to do champion tracking plus close lost. Well, with champion tracking plus close lost, you can go to a deal that you previously lost where the buyer was super, super interested, but they got blocked for whatever reason at their last company, and you track them to their next job. You've now stacked two signals. And if they go to a new job that is also a right fit account, you now have highly contextualized messaging that is unique and will absolutely stand out in the inbox because you take into account their past engagement and why you're reaching out. So that's a stacked signal in that sense. The other approach to stacking signals is you stack playbooks on top of one another so that if your primary goal is to get somebody that comes to an event to engage on your website content. And then once you've seen that they've engaged in your website content and you know what content they engaged with, then you follow up with next step content that might dive even deeper into the topic. You can now create a string, a conversion path that is based on the signals that you're stacking together to then take someone from awareness into acquisition. And all of these different playbooks can be done in a modular fashion. So you have to build out the full program. It's like this massively scaled program. It's just like, how do I move an account from awareness to engaged, and then from engaged to pipeline, and then from pipeline to customer? Like, and you just think about it in a more modular, simpler fashion. And again, if you want to dive more deeply, come to B2BMX East, where we'll be digging into this for about an hour. But that's the thought process. How do you simplify your ABM programs? You don't have to think about every single step before you start building, but just build each step in a modular fashion, stack those signals together, and you end up building out this program that actually takes somebody every step of their journey.
I love it. Like you said, simple, right? Simplify it. Keep it simple, stupid. Use that acronym, KISS. But just continuing on the B2BMX conversation that we've been having, I remember I saw you speak for the first time. It was B2B Sales and Marketing Exchange a couple years ago, and you were brought on with Terminus at the time. And I just loved your session so much. Everybody was so engaged, and everything you said was so relatable. You know, so you're a veteran of B2BMX, and this is actually going to be your second time speaking at B2BMX this year, because in Scottsdale this past February, you presented a campfire session, which was also a very engaging session on ABM. So you'll obviously be keynoting at B2BMX East in October. So just from your perspective, what keeps you coming back?
I mean, at the end of the day, I love the opportunity, one, to teach and to educate. So, I mean, the opportunity to share some of these things is always really, really nice. And I appreciate you inviting me to speak again. The other thing is that it's just the best people. Like, it's very, very funny because the first time I went to B2BMX, I met so many people that I had known for years online in person for the first time. So when I look at what B2BMX does really, really well is it brings together a lot of genuine practitioners, and there's a lot of thought leadership that's good thought leadership content, but it's often super high level and fluffy. I'm intentional with the word practitioners. There are people that are actually in it that can speak to the details of how do you actually build these programs. And it's not just these ethereal ideas that are built out in, for lack of a word, like a fantasy land, but it's truly, oh, I know what I can go and do with that. Maybe not today, because I used to say like, oh, all of my sessions are something you can go and do later today. And realize ABM is still hard, but it's practical thought processes that you could actually have fully implemented within probably the next 90 days. So again, for me, I love the people that I get to hang out with and see and catch up with and learn from. And I also just enjoy the opportunity to teach. So those are the things that keep me coming back.
I'm going to chime in real quick and just thank you, Mason, for saying all of that, because that's really what the event is all about. It's really about making all those connections or reconnecting with people that you may not know personally. Like you said, you know them all online, and the B2B community in general is big on LinkedIn. And I feel like a lot of people know each other online, but then they get to come to the event and then just connect. And then what you said about the no fluff kind of content and all that high level content, that's really something that we really push for. So I just wanted to thank you so much for saying that. And I didn't ask him to say that. So I'm very grateful for you. Thank you, Mason.
Of course. Thank you.
So now we obviously just touched on a few elements of your upcoming keynote and kind of just the excitement of B2BMX in general. But what else? Give us a little bit more. What else could the audience look forward to during your session in Alpharetta?
There are two core things that we generally share from a framework perspective, that as I've shared these things with people, I've had a lot of people actually say to me, oh, I understand ABM now for the first time. So hopefully if you've really wrestled with this idea that is ABM and you've been victim to the buzzword, or you've been given the ABM mandate to go and build it and you've not been quite sure how to do it, I hope my session helps dig really deep into it, specifically by marrying our two frameworks, which would be one, our 4D framework for how to build out activation playbooks. And the 4Ds would just be data. So who are you going after and why are you reaching out? Distribution, what are the channels you're going to use to get in front of these people? Destination, which is your content. And lastly is direction. How do you track it? And you marry that with an account progression model. And the account progression model is definition stage by stage by stage of how do we move someone from awareness to opportunity. When you marry those two things together, it makes it much more easy to actually digest how to build a program and gives you a very clear roadmap for how you can get started today. So you don't feel like you've got to go just do this massive tech stack implementation where you have to think through, oh my goodness, how do I engage 1,000 enterprise accounts so that I can get my sales team to have a full pipeline 3 months from now, which is what it often feels like. You now have a clear understanding of, I know where I can start today. I know it needs to be accomplished today. I also have a diagnostic tool for how to figure out when things are going wrong. And I have really, really a clear understanding of what I actually need to get this done. So hopefully that's gonna be helpful for a lot of people.
Yes, I definitely think so. And I know that earlier we had asked you what a successful ABM program looks like today. So I kind of wanted to almost have a full circle moment here and close out our conversation by asking you, what's next for ABM? What will a successful ABM program look like in B2B in the future? Like we said, it's always innovating, always evolving. So kind of let us know what's next.
I mean, from my perspective, it's transitioning from the fact that 80% of marketers don't feel like their programs are successful to having more consistent, repeatable programming that is successful. So I think ideally when we do ABM well, a lot of people are doing ABM as like they pull an entire firmographic list of their total addressable market, upload that, and then call that ABM. So when I think about what ABM looks like in the future, it is truly cohorted accounts that have clear reasons for reaching out. So that'd be your targets plus your triggers. And when you put those two things together, you then create highly personalized and truly nuanced specific messaging that resonates with those accounts. So again, there's lots of great tools that can help you do that. There's lots of great frameworks that can help you do that. But I truly think if we were to create individual programs that are cohorted by both targets and triggers across a variety of different programs, that's how you end up actually creating truly personalized ABM programs that can inevitably stack well together.
I love it. And that's your mic drop moment right there.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Scrappy ABM. If you enjoyed this week's episode, go ahead and give us a follow so that you don't miss a single episode. We drop every single Monday so that you can start your week off right. And if you're looking for additional great content just like this, go check out scrappyabm.com. We're building a library of frameworks, guides, templates, processes, and tools so you have everything that you need to build a low-budget, high-impact, scrappy program. Again, thank you for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. This has been your host, Mason Cosby, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.